Half an hour later, Victor and I huddle together with the howlers in one of the helium-3 containers stacked in the back of our transport. We can feel the ship reverberate beyond the container as it links its magnetic coupling to the dock's ringed surface. Beyond the ship's hull, oranges will be floating in mechanized suits, waiting to steer the weightless cargo containers onto magnetic trams that will in turn take them to the cosmos haulers awaiting the journey to Jupiter. There, they will resupply Roke's fleet in his war effort against Mustang and the Moon Lords. But before the containers are transported, Copper and Gray inspectors will come to examine them. They'll be bribed by our Blues into counting 49 containers instead of 50. Then, an Orange bribed by our contact will lose the container we're in, a common practice for the smuggling of illegal drugs or untaxed goods. You'll deposit it in a lower-level berth for machine parts, whereupon our son's contact will meet us and escort us to our safe house. At least, that's the plan. But for now, we wait. Eventually, gravity returns, signaling we're in the hangar. Our container settles on the floor with a thud. We steady ourselves against helium-3 drums. Voices drift beyond the metal walls of the container. The hauler beeps as it decouples from us and returns out the pulse field to space. Then silence. I don't like it. My hand twists around the leather grip of my razor inside my jacket sleeve. I take a step forward toward the door. Victra follows. Severo grabs my shoulder.
We wait for the contact.
We don't even know the man.
Dancer vouched for him.
He snaps his fingers at me to return to my place.
We wait.
I notice the others listening, so I nod and shut my mouth. It's 10 minutes later that we hear a solitary pair of feet click against the deck outside. The lock thuds back on the container doors, and dim light seeps in as they part to reveal a clean-cut, goateed Red with a toothpick in his mouth. Half a head shorter than Severo, he clicks his eyes over each of us in turn, one eyebrow climbing upward when he sees Ragnar. The other follows when he looks down the muzzle of Severo's scorcher. Somehow, he doesn't step back. Man's got a spine in him.
What can never die?
Severo growls in his best obsidian accent.
The fungus under Ares' sack.
The man smiles and glances over his shoulder.
Mind lowering the nasty. We got to move now. Borrowed this dock from the Syndicate. Except they don't really know about it, so unless you want to tangle with some professional uglies, we got to box the jabber and waddle on. Now means now.
Our contact goes by the name of Rollo. Stringy and wry, with sparkling bright eyes and an easy way with the women, even though he brings up his wife, the most beautiful woman who has apparently ever walked the surface of Mars, at least twice a minute. He also hasn't seen her in 8 years. He spent that time on the Hive as a welder on the space towers. Not technically a slave, like the Reds in the mines. He and his are contract labor. Wage slaves who work 14-hour days, 6 days a week, suspended between the megalithic towers that puncture the Hive, welding metal and praying they never suffer a workplace injury. Get an injury, you can't earn. Can't earn, you don't eat.
Mighty full of himself.
I overhear Severo saying under his breath to Victra, in the middle of the pack, as Rollo leads on.
I rather like his goatee.
Blues call this place the Hive,
Rollo's saying, as we head toward a graffiti-smeared tram in a derelict maintenance level. It smells like grease, rust, and old piss. Homeless vagrants festoon the floors of the shadowy metal halls, twitching bundles of blankets and rags that Rollo sidesteps without looking, though his hand never leaves the worn plastic hilt of his scorcher.
Might be to them. They got schools, homes here, little airhead communes, sects to be technic, where they learn to fly and sync up with the computers. But let me tell you what this place really is. Just a grinder. Men come in, towers go up.
He nods his head at the ground.
Meat goes out.
The only signs of life from the vagrants on the floor are little gouts of breath that plume up from their lumpy rags like steam from the cracks in a lava field. I shiver beneath my grey jacket and adjust the bag of gear over my shoulder. It's freezing on this level. Old insulation, probably. Pebble blows a cloud of steam through her nostrils as she pushes one of our gear carts, looking sadly left and right at the vagrants. Less empathetic, Victra guides the cart from the front, nudging a vagrant out of the way with her boot. The man hisses and looks up at her, and up, till he sees all 2.1 meters of annoyed killer. He skitters to the side, breathing through his teeth. Neither Ragnar nor Rollo seems to notice the cold. Sons of Ares wait for us on the run-down tram platform and inside the tram itself. Most are red, but there's a good amount of oranges and a green and blue in the mix. They cradle a motley collection of old scorchers and strafe the other hallways that lead to the platform with edgy eyes that can't help but jump our direction and wonder just who the hell we are. I'm thankful more than ever for the obsidian contacts and prosthetics.
Expecting trouble?
Zevro asks, eyeing the weapons in the son's hands.
Grey's been sweeping down here the last couple of months. Not hollow-ass tinpots from the local precinct, but naughty bastards. Legionnaires. Even some 13th mixed in with 10th and 5th. We had a nasty month, where they shred us up real bloody damn bad. Took our headquarters in the hollows, stuck syndicate toughs on us too. Paid to hunt their own. Most of us had to go to ground, hiding in secondary safe houses. Main body of Sons has been helping the Red Rebels on the station, obviously. But our special ops hasn't flexed muscle till today. We didn't want to take chances, you know. Ares said you lot got important business.
Ares is wise.
And a drama queen.
At the door to the tram, Ragnar hesitates, eyes lingering on an anti-terrorism poster pasted onto a concrete support column in the tram's waiting area. See something, say something, it reads, showing a pale red with evil crimson eyes and the stereotypical tattered dress of a miner skulking near a door that says restricted access. Can't see the rest. It's covered in rebel graffiti. But then I realize Ragnar's not looking at the poster, but at the man I didn't even notice who's crumpled on the ground beneath it. His hood's up. Left leg is an ancient mech replacement. A crusted brown bandage covers half his face. There's a puff, the release of pressurized gas, and the man leans back from us, shivering and smiling with perfectly black teeth. A plastic stim cartridge clatters to the floor. Tar dust.
Why do you not help these people?
Help them with what?
Rollo sees the empathy on Ragnar's face and doesn't really know how to answer.
Brother, we barely got enough for flesh and kin. No good sharing with that lot, you know.
But that one is Red. They are your family.
Rollo frowns at the bare truth.
Save the pity, Ragnar. That syndicate crank he's puffing. Most of them would slit your throat for an afternoon high. They're empty flesh.
Empty what? I turn back to her. She's caught off guard by the sharpness of my tone, but she's loath to back off. So she doubles down instinctively.
Empty flesh, darling. Part of being human is having dignity. They don't. They carved it out themselves. That was their choice, not gold's. Even if it's easy to blame them for everything. So why should they deserve my pity?
Because not everyone is you. Or had your birth. She doesn't reply. Rollo clears his throat, skeptical now about our disguises.
Lady's right about the slit your throat part. Most of them were imported labourers like me. Not counting the wife I've got, plus 3 in New Thebes that I send money back to. But I can't go home till my contract's up. Got 4 years left. These slags have given up on trying to get back.
4 years? You said you were already here 8.
Got to pay for my transit.
She stares at him quizzically.
Company doesn't cover it. Should have read the fine print. Sure, it was my choice to come up here.
He nods to the vagrants.
Was theirs too. But when the only other choice is starving.
He shrugs, as if we all know the answer.
These slags just got unlucky on the job. Lost legs, arms. Company doesn't cover prosthetics. At least not decent ones.
What about carvers?
And who the hell do you know that can afford flesh work?
I didn't even think of the cost. Reminds me of how distant I am from so many of the people I claim to fight for. Here's a red. One of my own, more or less. And I don't even know what type of food is popular in his culture.
What company do you work for?
Why, Julii Industries, of course.
I watch the metal jungle pass outside the dirty Duraglass window as the tram pulls away from the station. Victra sits down next to me, a troubled look on her face. But I'm a world away from her. My friends, lost in memory. I've been to the Hive before, with Arch-Governor Augustus and Mustang. He brought the Lancers to meet with Society Economic Ministers to discuss modernizing the moon's infrastructure. After the meetings, she and I snuck away to the moon's famous aquarium. I'd rented it out at absurd cost and arranged a meal and wine to be served to us in front of the orca tank. Mustang always liked natural creatures more than carved ones. I've traded 50-year-old wines and pink valets for a grimmer world with rusting bones and rebel thugs. This is the real world. Not the dream the Golds live in. Today, I feel the silent screams of a civilization that has been stepped on for hundreds of years. Our path skirts around the edges of the hollows, the center of the moon, where the latticework of cage slum apartments festers without gravity. To go there would be to risk falling into the middle of the Syndicate street war against the Sons of Ares, and to go any higher into the mid-color levels would be to risk Society Marines and their security infrastructure of cameras and holo scanners. Instead, we pass through the hinterlands of maintenance levels between the hollows and the needles, where reds and oranges keep the moon running. Our tram, driven by a sun sympathizer, speeds through its stops. The faces of waiting workers blur together as we pass. A pastiche of eyes, but faces all grey. Not the colour of metal, but the colour of old ash in a campfire. Ash faces, ash clothes, ash lives. But as the tunnel swallows our tram, colour erupts around us. Graffiti and years of rage bleeding out from the ribbed and cracking walls of its once grey throat. Profanity in 15 dialects. Golds ripped open in a dozen dark ways, and to the right of a crude sketch of a reaper's scythe decapitating Octavia Auloon is an image of Io hanging from the gallows in digital paint, hair aflame. Break the chains, written diagonally. It's a single glowing flower among the weeds of hate. A knot forms in my throat. Half an hour after we set out, our tram grinds to a halt outside a deserted low-colour industrial hub where thousands of workers should diverge from their early morning commute from the stacks to attend their functions. But now, it's still as a cemetery. Trash litters the metal floors. Holocans still flash with the society's news programmes. A cup sits on a table in a cafe, steam still rising off the top of the beverage. The suns have cleared the way only a few minutes before. Shows the extent of their influence here. When we leave, life will return to the place. But after we plant the bombs we've brought with us, after we destroy the manufacturing, won't all the men and women we intend to help be just as unemployed as those poor creatures in the tram station? If work is their reason for being, what happens when we take it away? I'd voice my concerns to Severo, but he's a driven arrow, as dogmatic as I once was. And to question him aloud seems a betrayal of our friendship. He's always trusted me blindly. So am I the worse friend for having doubts in him? We pass through several grav lifts into a garage for garbage disposal haulers, also owned by Julii Industries. I catch Victra wiping dirt off the family crest on one of the doors. The Speared Sun is worn and faded. The few dozen red and orange workers of the facility pretend not to notice our group as we file into one of the hauler bays. Inside, at the base of two huge haulers, we find a small army of Sons of Ares, more than 600. They're not soldiers, not like us. Most are men, but there's a scattering of women. Mostly younger reds and oranges forced to migrate here for work to feed Mars side families. Their weapons are shoddy. Some stand, others are seated, turning from conversations to see our pack of obsidian killers stalking across the metal deck, carrying bags of gear and pushing two mysterious carts. A small sadness grows in me. Whatever they do, wherever they go, their lives will be stained by this day. If it were my duty to address them, I'd warn them of the burden they're taking on, the evil they'll be letting into their lives. I'd say it's nicer to hear about glorious victories in war than to witness them, than to feel the weird unreality of lying in bed every morning, knowing you've killed a man, knowing a friend is gone. But I say nothing. My place now is beside Ragnar and Victra, behind Sevro, as he spits out his gum and stalks forward, giving me a wink and an elbow in the side to stand in front of the small army. His army. He's tiny for an obsidian male, but still scarred and tattooed and terrifying to this company of small-handed garbage men and hunched tower welders. He tilts his head forward, eyes smoldering behind his black contacts, wolf tattoos looking evil against his pale skin in the industrial light.
Greetings, Chris Monkeys. You might be wondering why Ares has sent a pack of hardcore nasties like us to this tin shithole.
The sons look to one another, nervously.
We aren't here to cuddle. We aren't here to inspire you and give long-ass speeches like the bloody damn sovereign.
He snaps his fingers. Pebble and Clown wheel the carts forward and unlatch the tops. The hinges squeal open to reveal mining explosives.
We're here to blow shit up. Any questions?
I float in the back of the trash collector with the howlers. It's dark. The night vision of my optics shows the garbage that orbits us in shadowy green. Banana peels, toy packaging, coffee grounds. Victra makes a gagging sound over the comm as toilet paper sticks to her face. Her mask is a demon helm. Like mine, it's pupil black and shaped subtly like a screaming demon face. Vishner managed to steal them from Luna's armories for the Suns more than a year back. With them, we can see most spectrums, amplify sound, track one another's coordinates, access maps and communicate silently. My friends around me are in all black. We wear no mechanized armor, only thin scarab skin over our bodies that will stop knives and occasional projectiles. We have no grav boots or pulse armor, nothing that will slow us, cause noise, or trip sensors. We wear oxygen tanks with air enough for 40 minutes. I finish adjusting Ragnar's harness and look to my datapad.
10.
The two reds crewing the old trash collector
9.
Are giving us a countdown.
Tuck your sacks and pop your cloaks.
I activate my ghost cloak and the world warps, distorted by the cloak. It's like looking through refracted, dirty water, and I already feel the battery pack heating up against my tailbone. The cloak's good for short bursts, but it burns up small batteries like the ones we pack and needs time to cool and recharge. I grope for Sevro and Victor's hands, managing to grasp them in time. The rest partner up as well. I don't remember feeling so frightened before the Iron Rain.
8.
Was I braver then? Maybe just more naive.
Hold tight. We're in for some chop. Popping top in 3, 2...
I tighten my grip on his hand.
1.
The collector's door retracts silently, bathing us in the amber light of a hollow display screen on a nearby skyscraper. There's a burst of air, and my world spins as the trash collector ejects its load of garbage from the back of its hold. We're like seed chaff thrown into the city, spinning with debris through a kaleidoscope world of towers and advertisements. Hundreds of ships funneling along avenues, all a flashing liquid blur. We continue to spin head over heel to mask our signatures. Over the comm, I hear the grousing of a blue traffic controller, annoyed at the spilled trash. Soon, there's a company copper on the line, threatening to fire the incompetent drivers. But it's what I don't hear that makes me smile. The police channels drone on their usual slant, reporting a syndicate airjacking in the Hive, a grisly murder in the ancient art museum near the Park Plaza, a data center robbery in the banking cluster. They haven't seen us amidst the debris. We slow our spin gradually, using small thrusters in our helmets. Bursts of air bring us to a steady drift. Silent in the vacuum. We're on target, along with the rest of the trash. We're about to impact on the side of a steel tower. Has to be a clean landing.
Shit.
Victra curses as we drift closer. Closer. My fingers tremble. Don't bounce.
Release!
I pull my hands from his and Victra's, and the three of us impact, jarringly, against the steel. The trash around us bounds off the metal, cartwheeling backward at odd angles. Severo and Victra stick, compliments of the magnets in their gloves, but a piece of debris impacting in front of me bounces off the steel and hits me in the thigh, altering my trajectory, tipping me sideways, hands windmilling for a grip, which causes me to spin. My feet hit first, and I bounce backward towards space, cursing.
Severo!
Victra, get him!
A hand grabs my foot, jerking me to a halt. I look down and see a warped, invisible form grasping my leg. Victra. Carefully, she pulls my weightless body back to the wall so I can clamp my own magnets onto the steel. Spots race across my vision. The city is all around us. It's dreadful in its silence, in its colors, in its inhuman metal landscape. It feels more like an ancient alien artifact than a place for humans.
Slow it down. Garrow, you're hyperventilating. Breathe with me. In. Out. In.
I force my lungs to breathe in sync with her. The spots soon fade. I open my eyes, face inches from the steel.
You shit your suit or something?
I'm good. A little rusty.
Pun intended, I'm sure.
Ragnar and the rest of the Howlers land 30 meters beneath us, on the wall. Pebble waves up to me.
Got 300 meters to go. Let's climb, you pixies.
Lights glow behind the glass of Quicksilver's double helix towers. Connecting the double helixes are nearly 200 levels of offices. I can make out shapes moving inside at computer terminals. I zoom in with my optics to watch the stock traders sitting in their offices, their assistants moving to and fro, analysts signaling furiously on holographic trading boards that communicate with the markets on Luna. Silvers all. They remind me of industrious bees.
Makes me miss the boys.
Takes me a moment to realize Victor's not talking about the Silvers. The last time she and I tried this tactic, Tactus and Roke were with us. We infiltrated Carnus' flagship from Vacuum as he refueled at an asteroid base during the Academy's mock war. We cut through his hull with aims of kidnapping him to eliminate his team. But it was a trap, and I narrowly escaped with the help of my friends. A broken arm, my only reward for the gambit. It takes us 5 minutes to climb from our landing place to the peak of the tower, where it becomes a large crescent. We don't go hand over hand, so climbing isn't the true term. The magnets in our gloves have fluctuating positive and negative currents that allow us to roll up the side of the tower like we have wheels in our palms. The toughest part of the ascent, or descent, or whatever you'd call it in the null grav, is the crescent slope at the extreme height, or end, of the tower. We have to cling to a narrow metal support beam that extends out among a ceiling of glass, much like the stem of a leaf. Beneath our bellies and through the glass lies Quicksilver's famous museum. And above us, just over the peak of Quicksilver's tower, hangs Mars. My planet seems larger than space, larger than anything ever could be. A world of billions of souls, of designer oceans, mountains, and more irrigable acres of dry land than Earth ever had. It's night on this side of the world, and you could never know that millions of kilometers of tunnels wind through the bones of the planet, that even as its surface glows with the lights of the thousand cities of Mars, there is a pulse, unseen, a tide that is rising. But now, it looks peaceful. War, a distant, impossible thing. I wonder what a poet would say in this moment. What Roke would whisper into the air. Something about the calm before the storm. Or a heartbeat among the deep. But then there's a flash. It startles me. A spasm of light that flares white, then erodes into devilish neon as a mushroom grows in the planet's blackness.
Do you see that?
I ask over the comms, blinking away the cigar burn the distant detonation made in my vision. Our comms crackle with curses as the others turn to see.
Shit. New Thebes?
No, farther north. That's the Aventine Peninsula, so it's probably Cyprion. Last intel said the Red Legion was moving toward the city.
Then comes another flash, and the seven of us hunker motionless on the crest of the building, watching as a second nuclear bomb detonates a thumb's distance away from the first.
Bloody damn. Is it us or them? Stavro!
I don't know.
You don't know?
How could he not know? I want to shout. But I grasp the answer, because Dancer's words now haunt me.
Severo's not running this war,
he told me, weeks ago, after another failed Howler mission.
He's just a man pouring gas on the fire.
Maybe I didn't understand how far gone this war is, how far-reaching the chaos has become. Could I have been wrong to trust him so blindly? I watch his expressionless mask. The skin of his armor drinks in the colors of the city around, reflecting nothing. An abyss for light. He turns slowly from the explosion and begins to climb again, already moving on.
Holo News has it. Fast. They say Red Legion used nukes against gold forces near Cyprion. At least that's the story.
Bloody damn liars. Another bait and switch.
Where would Red Legion get nukes?
Harmony would use them if she had any. But I wager it was gold, using the bombs on Red Legion instead.
Doesn't mean shit to us now. Lock it up. Still gotta do what we came to do. Get your asses in gear.
Numbly, we obey. When we reach our entry zone on the crescent of the double helix tower, rehearsed routine takes over. I pull a small acid flask from the pack on Victor's back. Severo releases a nanocam, no larger than my fingernail, into the air, where it hovers above the glass, scanning for life inside the museum. There is none. Not a surprise at 3 a.m. He pulls out a pulse generator and waits for Pebble to finish her work on her datapad.
What's what, Pebble?
Code's worked. I'm in the system. Just have to find the right zone. There it is. Laser grid is down. Thermal cams are frozen. Heartbeat sensors are off. Congratulations, everyone. We're officially ghosts. So long as no one manually pulls an alarm.
Severo activates the pulse generator, and a faint iridescent bubble blooms around us, creating a seal, so that the vacuum of space doesn't invade the building with us. Would be a quick way to be discovered. I put a small suction cup on the center of the glass, then open the acid container and apply the foam to the window in a 2 meter by 2 meter box around the suction cup. The acid bubbles as it eats through the glass, creating an opening. With a small rush of air from the building into our pulse field, the glass pane pops up where Victor grabs it to keep it from flying into space.
Rags first.
It's 100 meters to the museum floor below. Ragnar clamps a rappelling winch to the edge of the glass and clips his harness to the magnetic wire. Pulling his razor out, he reactivates his ghost cloak and pushes through the hole. It's disturbing to the senses, seeing his near-invisible form accelerate down to the floor, gripped by the Skyhook's artificial gravity, while I'm still floating. He looks a demon, made of the heat that shimmers above the desert on a summer day.
Clear.
Break an arm.
Victra says, pushing me into the hole after Severo. I float forward, then feel myself gripped by gravity as I cross the boundary into the room. I slide down the wire, picking up speed. My stomach lurches at the sudden influx of weight, food sloshing around. I land hard on the ground, almost twisting my ankle as I pull up my silenced scorcher and search for contacts. The rest of the howlers land behind me. We crouch back to back in the grand hall. The floor is grey marble. The length of the hall is impossible to gauge because it curves according to the crescent, bowing upward and out of sight, playing with gravity and giving me a sense of vertigo. Metal relics tower around us. Old rockets from man's pioneer age. The coat of arms of the Luna Company marks the hull of a grey probe near Ragnar. It looks decidedly like Octavia Auloon's house crest.
Oh, so this is what it's like to feel fat.
Severo takes a small jump in the heavy gravity.
Disgusting.
Quicksilver's from Earth. Jacks it up even higher when he's negotiating with anyone from low-grav birthplaces.
It's 3 times what I'm used to on Mars. 8 times what they prefer on Io or Europa. But in rebuilding my body, Mickey jacked the simulators up to 2x Earth's gravity. It's an unpleasant sensation, weighing nearly 800 pounds. But it works the muscles something horrible. We strip our oxygen tanks and stow them in the engine room of an old space shuttle, painted with the flag of pre-Empire America. So we're left with our small packs, scarab skin, demon helms, and weapons. Severo pulls up Victor's crude maps of the tower's interior.
Found our boy yet, Pebble?
I can't. It's odd. The cameras are off in the top 2 levels. Same with biometric readers. Can't pinpoint him like we planned.
Off?
Now maybe he's having an orgy or wanking off and doesn't want a security to see. Either way, he's hiding something, so that's where we're headed.
I cue Severo's personal line so the others can't hear us.
We can't wander around looking for him. If we're caught in the halls without leverage, it'll be a massacre.
We won't wander.
He cuts me off before addressing the howlers.
Cloaks on, ladies. Razors and silent scorchers. Pulse fists only if shit gets dirty.
He ripples, transparent.
Howlers, on me.
We slink from the museum into a maze of otherworldly hallways, following Severo's lead. Floors of black marble, walls of glass, 10-meter-high ceilings made from pulse fields, which look into aquariums where vibrant reefs of coral stretch like fungal tentacles. Reptilian mermaids, 1 foot long with humanoid faces, grey skin and skulls shaped like crowns, swim through a kingdom of scalding blue and violent orange. Hateful little crow eyes glare down at us as they pass. The walls are mood glass and pulse with subtle alternating colours. Now, heartbeats of magenta, soon rippling curtains of cobalt silver. It's dreamlike. Amidst the maze are little alcoves, miniature art galleries showcasing works of contemporary dot holographs and 21st century AD ostentatiousism instead of the reserved neoclassical Romanism so in vogue with Peerless Scarred. Recharging our battery packs to our ghost cloaks, we duck into a gallery where lurks a gaudy purple metallic dog shaped like a balloon animal.
Gory hell. man's got the taste of a tabloid socialite.
Ragnar cocks his head at the dog.
What is it?
Art, supposedly.
The tone of condescension Victor strikes intrigues me, as does the building. It pulses with artifice. The art, the walls, the mermaids, all so on the nose of what the peerless Skard would expect of a newly moneyed silver. Quicksilver must know gold psychology intimately in order to have been allowed to grow so wealthy. So I wonder, is this extravagance all something far more clever? A mask so obvious and easy to accept that no one would ever think to look beneath it. Quicksilver, for all his reputation, has never been called stupid. So perhaps this tawdry dreamscape isn't for him. It's for his guests. Which makes me think something here is amiss as we reach an unlit atrium with unpolished sandstone floors, perforated by pink jasmine trees, and slink across the floor in a V formation toward the set of double doors that leads to Quicksilver's bedroom suite. Cloaks deactivated so we can better see, razors rigid and held out, metal drifting centimeters above the sandstone. This isn't a home. It's a stage, made to manipulate, sinister in the cold calculation with which it was constructed. I don't like it. I key Severo's frequency again.
Something's wrong here. Where are the servants? The guards?
Maybe he likes his privacy.
I think it's a trap.
A trap? Your head or your gut talking?
My gut.
He's quiet for a breath, and I wonder if he's speaking to someone else on the other line. Maybe he's speaking to all of them.
What's your rec?
Pull back. Assess the situation to see if there's any more intel we can gather.
Pull back? For all we know, they just dropped nukes on our people. We need this.
Severo, you need to...
Shit, I've run 13 ops just to get intel on the silvery asshole. We leave now, that's all slagged. They'll know we were here. We won't have this chance again. He's the key to getting the jackal. You gotta trust me, Reap. Do you?
I bite back a curse and cut the signal short. Not sure if I'm angry with him or with myself. Or because I know the jackal removed the spark that made me feel different. Every opinion I have feeble and malleable to others. Because I know, deep down, beneath the intimidating scarab skin, beneath the demon mask, is a callow little boy who cried because he was scared of being alone in the dark. Purple light suddenly floods the room as a luxury vessel cruises past the wall of windows at our backs. We hastily line up to either side of the door to Quicksilver's suite, preparing to breach. I watch the vessel drift along through my black optics. Lights pulse on one of its decks as several hundred pixies writhe to some Etrurian club beat. That's all the rage on far-off Luna. As if a war didn't rage on the planet beneath this moon. As if we didn't move to rupture their way of life. They'll drink champagne from Earth in clothes made on Venus, in ships fueled by Mars. And they'll laugh and consume and screw and face no consequences. So many little locusts. I feel Severo's righteous wrath burn in me. Suffering isn't real to them. War isn't real. It's just a three-letter word for other people that they see in the digital news feeds. Just a stream of uncomfortable images they skip past. A whole business of weapons and arms and ships and hierarchies they don't even notice. All to shield these fools from the true agony of what it means to be human. Soon they'll know. And on their deathbeds, they'll remember tonight who they were with, what they were doing when that three-letter word gripped them and never let go. This pleasure cruise, this hideous decadence is the last gasp of the Golden Age. And what a pathetic gasp it is.
Of course, I trust you.
I tighten my grip on my razor. Ragnar's watching us, even though he can't hear our signal. Victress waiting to breach the door. The light fades, and the ship disappears into the cityscape. I'm surprised to realize I don't feel satisfaction in knowing what's about to happen, in knowing their age will fall. Neither does it bring joy to think of all the lights in all the cities across this empire of man dimming, or all the ships slowing, or all the brilliant golds fading as their buildings rust and crumble. Would that I could hear Mustang's take on this plan. Before, I've missed her lips, her scent, but now I miss the comfort that comes from knowing her mind is aligned with mine. When I was with her, I did not feel so alone. She'd probably chastise us for focusing on breaking rather than building. Why do I feel this way now? I'm surrounded by friends, striking at gold as I have always wished. Yet something itches in the back of my brain, like eyes watch me. Whatever Severo says, something is wrong here, not just in this building, but with his plan. Is this how I would have done it? How Fitchner would have done it? If it succeeds, what do we usher in after the dust has settled and the helium no longer flows? A dark age? Severo is a force unto himself. His rage a thing to move mountains. I was once like that. And look what that got me.
Kill his guards, stun the pinks. Smash, grab, and go.
My hand tightens on my blade. He gives the signal, and Ragnar and Victor slip through the doors. The rest of us follow into the dark. The lights are off. It's tomb silent. The front room empty. An electric green jellyfish floats in a tank on a table, casting weird shadows. We move through to the bedroom. I guard the door with Pebble, crouching on a knee, silenced railgun cradled in my hands, sheathing my razor on my arm. Behind us, a man sleeps in a four-poster bed. Ragnar grabs him by the foot and jerks him out. Clad in expensive sleepwear, he sprawls onto the floor, waking midair and screaming silently into Ragnar's hand.
Shit, it's not him. It's a pink.
I glance back. Ragnar kneels over the pink, blocking him from my view. Severo hits the bedpost, cracking it.
It's 3 a.m. Where the hell is he?
It's 4 p.m. market time on Luna. Maybe he's in his office. Ask the slave.
Where is your master?
Severo's mask makes his voice warble like a steel cable struck by an iron rod. I keep my eyes trained on the living room until the pink's whimper makes me look back. Severo's got his knee in the man's groin.
Pretty pajamas, boyo. Wanna see what they look like in red?
I flinch at the coldness in this voice, knowing the tone all too well, hearing it from the jackal as he tortured me in Attica.
Where is your master?
Severo twists his knee. The pink wails in pain, but still refuses to answer. The howlers watch the torture in silence, bent, faceless stains in the dark room. There's no discussion, no moral question at play. I know they've done this before. I feel dirty in the realization, in hearing the pink sobbing on the ground. This is more a part of war than trumpets or starships. Quiet, unremembered moments of cruelty.
I don't know. I don't know.
The voice. I remember that voice from my past. I rush from my post at the door and join Severo, pulling him off of the pink, because I know the man. And his gentle features, his long, angular nose, rose quartz eyes, and dark honey skin. He's as responsible for making me what I am as Mickey ever was. It's Mateo, beautiful and fragile, now gasping on the ground, arm broken, bleeding from his mouth, holding his groin where Severo beat him.
What the hell's your damage?
I know him.
What?
Taking advantage of my distraction and seeing nothing but the black demon visages of our helms, Mateo lunges for a datapad sitting on the bedstand. Severo's faster. With a meaty thud, The hardest bone density in the species of man meets the softest. Severo's fist shatters Mateo's fragile jaw. He gags and falls, convulsing to the floor, eyes rolling back into his head. I watch in a haze, the violence seeming unreal, and yet so cold and primitive and easy. Just muscle and bone moving the way it shouldn't. I find myself reaching for Mateo, falling over his twitching body, shoving Severo back.
Don't touch him!
Mateo's been knocked unconscious, mercifully. I can't tell if he has spinal damage or brain trauma. I touch the gentle curls of his now dusky hair. It has a blue sheen to it. His hands clutched tight like a child's, a slender silver band on his ring finger. Where has he been this whole time? Why is he here?
I know him.
Ragnar's bending beside him protectively, though there's nothing we can do here for Mateo. Clown tosses the datapad to Severo.
Panic switch.
What do you mean you know him?
He's a son of Ares. Or he was. He was one of my teachers before the Institute. He taught me Aureate culture.
Gory hell.
Screwface mutters, while Victor toes his wrist, where little flowers embellish his pink sigils.
He's a rose of the garden, like Theodora.
She glances to Ragnar.
He costs as much as you, Stained.
You're sure it's the same man?
Of course I'm bloody damn sure. His name is Mateo.
Then why is he here?
Doesn't look like a captive. Those are expensive pajamas. He's probably a paramour. Quicksilver's not known for his celibacy, after all.
He must have turned.
Or he was on an assignment for your father.
Then why didn't he contact us? He's defected. Means Quicksilver has infiltrated the Suns. Shit! He could know about Tinos. He could know about this bloody damn raid.
My mind races. Did Ares send Mateo here? Or did Mateo leave a sinking ship? Maybe Mateo told them about me before Harmony did. It's a knife in the gut thinking that. I didn't know him long, but I cared for him. He was a kind person, and there's so few of those left. Now look what we've done to him.
We should get the bloody hell out of here.
Not without Quicksilver.
We don't know where Quicksilver is. There's more to this. We have to wait for Mateo to wake up. Someone have a stim shot.
Those would kill him. Pink circulatory system can't handle military crank.
We don't have time for talking. Can't risk being pinned in here. We move. Now.
Several, you've...
I try to speak, but he rolls on, looking to Clown, who is using Mateo's datapad.
Clown, what do you got?
I've got a food request on the internal server's kitchen subsection. Looks like someone has ordered a whole host of mutton and jam sandwiches and coffee to room C19.
Reaper. What do you think?
It could be a trap. We need to adjust our plan to...
Even if it is a trap, look who we're packing. We'll punch through that shit.
Bloody damn right, Julii.
Severo moves toward the door.
Screwface, bring the pink and stow him. Fangs out. Ragnar, Victor in front. Blood's coming.
One level down, we meet our first security team. Half a dozen lurchers stand in front of a large glass door that ripples like the surface of a pond. They wear black suits instead of military armor. Implants in the shape of silver heels stick out from the skin behind their left ears. There's more patrolling this level, but no servants. Several greys in similar suits took a coffee cart into the room a few minutes earlier. Strange that they wouldn't use pinks or browns for delivering coffee. Security is tight, so whoever is in Quicksilver's office must be important. Or at least, very paranoid.
We're flowing quick.
Severo leans back around the hallway corner, where we wait 30 meters from the group of greys.
Neutralize those shitheads, then breach fast-like.
We don't know who's in there.
And there's only one way to find out. Go!
Ragnar and Victor go first around the corner, ghost cloaks bending the light. The rest of us follow at a dead sprint. One of the greys squints down the hall at us. The implanted thermal optics in his irises throb red as they activate and see the heat radiating from our battery packs.
Ghost close!
Six sets of practiced hands flow to Scorchers. Far too late. Ragnar and Victra tear into them. Ragnar swings his razor, cutting off one's arm and severing the jugular of another. Blood sprays over the glass walls. Victra fires her silenced Scorcher. Magnetically hurled slugs slam into two heads. I slide forward between falling bodies, stick my razor through a man's ribcage, feeling the pop and give of his heart. I retract my blade into whip form to free it, let it stiffen again back to my sling blade before the man drops. The Greys haven't managed to fire a single shot, but one has pressed a button on his datapad, and the deep throbbing sound of the tower's alarm echoes down the hall. The walls pulse red, signaling an emergency. Severo cuts the last man down.
Breach the room! Now!
Something's wrong. I feel it in my gut. But Victra and Severo are propelling this forward. And Ragnar's kicking in the door. Ever a slave to momentum, I plunge in after him. Quicksilver's conference room is less flamboyant than the rooms above. Its ceiling is 10 meters high. Its walls are of digital glass that swirls subtly with silver smoke. Two rows of marble pillars run parallel on either side of a giant onyx conference table with a dead white tree rising from its center. At the far end of the room, a huge viewing window looks out at the industry of the hive. Regulus Ag Sun, hailed from Mercury to Pluto as Quicksilver, richest man under the sun, stands before the window, mauling a glass of red wine with a fleshy hand. He's bald, forehead wrinkled as a washboard, pugilist lips, hunched simian shoulders leading to butcher fingers that sprout from the sleeves of a high-collared Venusian turquoise robe embroidered with apple trees. He's in his 60s, skin bronzed with a marrow-deep tan. A small goatee and mustache accent his face in a vain attempt to give it shape, though it seems he stayed away from carvers for the most part. His feet are bare, but it's his three eyes that demand attention. Two are heavy-lidded and silver, an earthy, efficient shade. The third is gold, and implanted in a simple silver ring the man wears on the middle finger of his fat right hand. We've interrupted his meeting. Nearly 30 coppers and silvers pack the room. They're formed into two parties and sit across from one another at a giant's onyx table, littered with coffee cups, wine carafes, and data pads. A blue, hollow document floats in the air between the two factions, obviously the object of their attention, until the door shattered inward. Now they push back from the table, most too stunned yet to feel fear, or to even see us as the howlers enter the room in ghost cloaks. But it isn't just coppers and silvers at the table.
Oh, shit.
Among the professional colours rise six golden knights in full pulse armour. And I know them all. On the left, a dark-faced older man wearing the pure black armor of the Death Knight. On either side of him are pudgy-faced Moira, a Fury, sister of Aja, and good old Cassius Au Bellona. To the right are Cavax Au Telmanis, Daxo Au Telmanis, and the girl who left me on my knees in the old mining tunnels of Mars nearly 1 year ago. Mustang.
Hold your fire!
I shout, pushing down Victra's weapon, but Severo's barking orders, and Victra brings her weapon back up. We form a staggered line with our pulse fists and scorchers aimed at the golds. We hold fire because we need Quicksilver alive, and I know Severo's as stunned as I to see Mustang, Cassius, and the Telmanis is here.
On the ground, or we waste you!
Severo screams, voice inhuman and magnified by his demon helm. The howlers join him, filling the air with a harpy's chorus of commands. My blood pumps cold. The alarm throbs around the roaring voices. Not knowing what to do, I point my pulse fist at the most dangerous gold in the room. Cassius, knowing what must be going through Severo's mind as he sees his father's killer in the flesh. My helmet syncs with the weapon to illuminate weak points in his armor. But my eyes drink in Mustang as she sets down a cup of coffee, graceful as ever, and steps back from the table, the pulse fist implanted in the left gauntlet of her armor, slowly beginning to blossom open. My mind and heart war against each other. What the hell is she doing here? She's supposed to be in the rim. Like her, the other golds aren't listening to us. They don't know who we are past our helmets. No wolf cloaks today. They step back, eyes wary, judging the situation. Cassius's razor slithers on his right arm. Kavax slowly lifts himself from his chair, along with Daxo.
Stop!
Quicksilver waves his hands frantically.
Stop! Do not fire! This is a diplomatic meeting! Identify yourselves!
We've stumbled into the middle of some negotiation, I realize. A surrender of Mustang's forces? An alliance? Notably absent is the Jackal. Is Quicksilver betraying him? He must be. So must the Sovereign. That's why this place is so deserted. No servants, minimum security. Quicksilver wanted only men he trusted at this meeting, held so close under his ally's nose. My stomach lurches as I realize the rest of the room must think we're bone riders, which means they think we're here to kill them. And this is going to end only one way.
On the bloody damn ground!
What do we do?
Pebble asks over the comm.
Reaper?
I claim the Bologna.
You stun weapons! It's Mustang, she's...
Don't do shit against that armor. If they lift their weapons, kill the pricks. Full pulse charges. I'm not risking any of our family.
Severo, listen to me. We need to talk to...
My words cut short because he uses the master command built into his helmet to jam my comm output signal. I can hear them, but they can't hear me.
Shit!
I curse futilely at him.
Bologna, stop moving. I said stop.
Opposite Mustang, Cassius silently drifts through the silvers, using them as cover to close the gap between us. He's only 10 meters away, getting closer. I sense Victra tensing beside me, hungry to be let loose on one of the men who she blames for her mother's death. But there's civilians between us and the golds, and Quicksilver's a prize we can't afford to lose. My eyes judge the plump cheeks of the silvers and coppers. Not a soul here is oppressed. Not a belly here has ever been hungry. These are collaborators. Severo would scalp them, one by one, if given a rusty knife and a few idle hours.
Reaper,
Ragnar says, quietly, looking to me for instruction.
Take your hand away from the razor!
Victra shouts at Cassius. He stays quiet, coming forward, certain as a glacier. Moira and the Death Knight follow after him. Kavax's helmet is slithering up to cover his head. Mustang's face is already covered, her pulse fist active and pointed at the ground. I know death well enough to hear it gather its breath. I activate my external speakers.
Kavax! Mustang! Stop! It's me! It's Darrow!
Stop moving, you piece of shit!
Cassius smiles pleasantly and he lunges forward. Ragnar makes a weird twisting movement to my left, and one of the two razors he carries flies through the air and skewers the Death Knight through his forehead. The silvers gape at the famous Olympic Knight teetering to the ground.
Kavax, oh, Kalmanis!
Kavax roars and rushes forward with Daxo. Mustang breaks sideways. Moira charges, lifting her pulse fist.
Waste him.
The room erupts. Air torn to shreds by superheated particles as the howlers open fire at point-blank range into the crowded room. Marble turns to dust. Chairs melt into gnarled chunks of metal and kick across the floor. Meat and bone explode, filling the air with red mist as silvers and coppers are caught in the crossfire. Severo misses Cassius, who dives behind a pillar.
Kavax
is shot a dozen times, but he doesn't falter, even as his shields overheat. He's going to smash into Sevro and Victra with his razor, when Ragnar charges from the side and hits the smaller man so hard with his shoulder that Kavax is lifted clean off his feet. Daxo attacks Ragnar from behind, and three giants tumble to the side of the room, crushing two scrabbling coppers half their size as they go. The coppers scream on the ground, legs shattered. Behind Kavax, Mustang takes two shots to the chest, but her pulse shield holds. She stumbles, fires back at us, hitting Pebble in her thigh. Pebble's lifted backward and flipped into the wall, leg shattered from the blast. She screams and clutches at it. Clown and Victra cover her, firing back at Mustang, dragging Pebble behind a pillar. Screwface and four other howlers who guarded the door and kept Mateo outside now fire into the room from the hallway. I stumble sideways, lost in the chaos, as the marble where I stood shatters. Silvers scramble under the table. Others kick away from their chairs, racing for the imagined safety of the columns on the fringes of the room. Hypersonic pulse fire rips between them, over their heads, through them, buckling the columns. Quicksilver runs behind two coppers, using them as human shields, when shrapnel rips into them, and they all tumble down in a mess of limbs and blood. Moira, the Fury, rushes Sevro to impale my friend from behind with a razor as he tries to move past Ragnar, who's fighting both Telemannuses to get at Cassius. I fire my pulse fist point blank into her side just before she reaches him. Her armor's pulse shield absorbs the first few rounds, rippling blue in a cocoon around her. She stumbles sideways, and if I did not continue to fire, she'd have nothing but a bruise in the morning. But my middle finger is heavy on the trigger of the weapon. She's an engineer of oppression, and one of the best minds of gold. And she tried to kill Sevro. Bad play. I fire till her shield buckles inward, till she falls to a knee, till she twitches and screams as the molecules of her skin and organs superheat. Boiling blood comes out of her eyes and nose. Armor and flesh fuse together, and I feel the rage ride wild inside me, numbing me to fear, to sense, to compassion. This is the Reaper who laid Cassius low, who slew Carnus, who gold cannot kill. Moira's pulse fist fires wildly as the tendons of her fingers contract in the heat, shooting into the ceiling on full automatic. Twitching sideways, whipping a stream of death across the room. Two silvers running for cover explode. The glass of the viewport at the far end of the room, which looks out onto the space city, cracks perilously. Howlers scramble for cover till the pulse fist glows molten on Moira's left hand, and the barrel overheats to melt inward with a corrupt fizzle. With that last gasp of rage, the wisest of the Sovereign's three Furies lies in a charred husk. My only wish is that it could have been Aja. I turn back to the room, feeling the cool hand of Wrath guiding me, hungering for more blood. But all those that are left are my friends. Or once were. I shudder with hollowness as the rage leaves me as fast as it came, replaced by panic as I watch my friends try to kill one another. The ordered lines have broken down into a high-tech brawl. Feet sliding on glass, shoulder blades slamming into walls, pulse fist battles between pillars, hands and knees scrambling against the floor as pulse fists wail and blades clamor and hack. And it's only now, only with this terrifying clarity, that I realize that there is only one common thread that binds them. It's not an idea, not my wife's dream, not trust or alliances or color. It's me. And without me, this is what they will do. Without me, this is what Sevro has been doing. What an inevitable waste it seems. Death begets death begets death. I have to stop it. At the center of the room, Cassius stumbles after Victor through twisted chairs and shattered glass. Blood slicks the floor beneath them. Her damaged ghost cloak sparks on and off, and she flashes between ghost and shadow like an undecided demon. Cassius cuts her again across the thigh and spins as Clown shoots at him, cutting Clown across the side of his head before bending back to dodge a shot from Pebble on the ground across the room. Victra rolls under the table to escape Cassius, slicing at his ankles. He jumps onto the table, firing his pulse fist into the onyx till it caves in the center, trapping her beneath. He's inches from killing her when Severo shoots him from behind. The blast absorbed by Cassius's shield, but one that knocks him several meters to the side. To the right, Ragnar, Daxo, and Kavax fight a duel of titans. Ragnar pins Kavax's arm to the wall with his razor, leaves the weapon, ducks, fires his pulse fist into Daxo at point-blank range. Daxo's shields absorb the blast, and his razor misses Ragnar and takes out a chunk of the wall instead. Ragnar hits Daxo in his joints and is about to snap his neck when Kavax skewers him through the shoulder with a razor, screaming his family name. I rush to help my stained friend, but as I do, I feel someone to my left. I turn, just in time to see Mustang flying through the air at me, her helmet covering her face, her razor arching down to cut me in two. I bring my own razor up just in time. Blades slam together. Vibrations rattle down my arm. I'm slower than I remember, much of my muscle instinct lost to the darkness, despite Mickey's lab and my training bouts with Victra. Plus, Mustang's gotten faster. I'm pressed back. I try to flow around Mustang, but she moves her razor like she's been at war for the last year. I try to slip to the side, like Lauren taught me, but there's no escape. She's smart, using the rubble, the pillars to corner me. I'm being hemmed in, corralled by the flashing metal. My defense doesn't cave, but it erodes along the edges as I protect my core. The blade parts an inch-deep gash through my left shoulder. Stings like a pit viper bite. I curse, and she slices through more flesh. I'd shout at her to stop. Shout my name. Something. If I had even half a second to breathe. But it's all I can do to keep my arms moving. I bend back just in time as she cuts a shallow gash through the neck of my scarab skin. Three quick cuts at the tendons of my right arm follow, just missing. Building a rhythm. My back's touching the wall. Cut, cut, stab. Fire opening up my skin. I'm going to die here.
No help!
I call for help over my comm, but they're still jammed by Severo. We've bitten off more than we can chew. I scream in futility as Mustang's blade scrapes through three of my ribs. She spins the blade in her hand, swings backhanded to cut my head off. I manage to deflect the razor into the wall with mine, pinning it above my head so her helmet is near my mask. I headbutt her. Her helmet's stronger than the composite duroplastic of my mask. She reels back her own head and slams it into mine, using my own tactic. A seam of pain splinters down my skull. I nearly black out, vision rushing out. In. Still standing. Feel part of my mask crack off and slide off my face. Nose broken again. Seeing spots. The rest of the mask crumbles. And I stare at the death-eyed horse helmet of Mustang as she prepares to end me. Her razor arm draws back to deliver the killing stroke. And it stays there, above her head. Trembling. As she looks at my exposed face, her helmet slithers away to reveal her own. Sweat-soaked hair clings to her forehead, darkening the golden luster. Beneath, her eyes are wild, and I wish I could say it's love or joy I see in them, but it's not. If anything, it's fear. Maybe horror that draws the blood from her face as she stumbles back. Gesturing speechlessly with her offhand.
Darrow?
She looks over her shoulder to see the mayhem that still grips the room. Our quiet moment a little bubble in the storm. Cassius flees, disappearing through a side door, leaving the corpse of the Death Knight and Moira behind. Our eyes meet before he disappears. Victra gives chase until Severo reels her back in. The rest of the Howlers are turning toward Mustang. I take a step toward her and stop. when the tip of her razor pricks my collarbone.
I saw you die!
She backs away toward the main door, boots sliding over the marble, crunching on bits of glass from the walls.
Kavax! Dexo, pull back!
The Telmanises scramble to separate themselves from Ragnar, confused at who the masked man they are fighting is and why they're bleeding in so many places. They try to regroup on Mustang, both men rushing for her in a hasty retreat. But as they pass me to join her near the door, I know I can't just watch her go. So I whip my razor around Kavax's neck. He gags and reels against me, but I hold on. With the press of a button, I could retract my whip and sever his head. But I've no interest in killing the man. He falls, only when Ragnar sweeps his leg and puts a knee into his chest, slamming to the floor. Screwface and the others are on him, pinning him down.
Don't kill him!
Screwface knew Pax. He's met the Telmanises, so he holds his blade and snaps at the newer howlers to do the same. Daxo tries to rush to his father's aid, but Ragnar and I bar his way. His bright eyes stare in confusion at my face.
Go! Virginia! Flee!
I have the Pax! Orion is alive!
Mustang eyes the bloody howlers who are at my back, coming for her and Daxo.
Don't kill him, please!
And then, with a sorrowful look to Kavax, she flees the room.